Thank you.
Good evening, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Committee, and
Good
also
evening.
greetings to the Honorable Deputy, Honorable Minister, General Becky Cele, and Honorable Deputy Minister Matale and Jeffries, and my boss, National Commissioner, and all the colleagues of the SAPS. The presentation, the National Commission has already dealt with the table of contents. We can go to the next slide. On the next slide, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, it deals with the establishing of victim-friendly rooms at police stations. In this slide, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, we're indicating the presentation that if there's a need to provide, can you go to the previous slide? Can I stay? Yes. I think it jumped the first slide, Honorable Chairperson. My apology for that. The first slide, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, it deals with the victim-friendly rooms must provide an opportunity for victims of intimate violence, especially gender-based violence, child abuse and sexual offenses and domestic violence, to make their statements in private in a non-threatening environment. The needs of all victims should be considered when victim-friendly rooms is equipped. And we also indicated that victim-friendly rooms must have an inventory to keep record of all equipment, which include the furniture provided by the SAPS. A separate asset register must be kept to record all assets, equipment acquired through donations. Then there is further bullets that are speaking, Honorable Chairperson and Members, that VFRs must not be situated in close proximity to police cells or in noisy or busy areas. No VFRs may be converted to office space or be used for any other purpose than for victim support services. VFRs can be discreetly decorated and painted to create a calm and relaxing atmosphere. VFRs may not be used as a sleeping over facilities and should not be equipped as such. Can we go to the next slide? On the next slide, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, it is further on the issue of victim-friendly rooms, the establishment at police stations. If there's a need to provide overnight accommodation, arrangements must be made with nearby shelters and the Department of Social Development. The involvement of NGOs in this regard is permitted only if they are working in close cooperation with South African Police Service or the Department of Social Development. The functioning and management of VFRs at police stations will always remain the responsibility of the SAPS and other departments and NGOs, and or NGOs will only render support services. We can go to the next slide. On the next slide, Honorable Chairperson and Members, the establishing of victim-friendly rooms at police stations, the status currently is that the stations with dedicated VFRs is 1,019, and the blue color. And then from there, it's indicating also that for those non-developed stations, non-devolved stations without dedicated VFRs, we have the status there is 139. And when you look at the breakdown of provinces, Honorable Chairperson and Members, we have Eastern Cape with the highest number at 37, followed by KwaZulu-Natal at 29, and Free State at 24, and then followed by Limpopo and Northern Cape and Northwest. These are the provinces without dedicated victim-friendly rooms, which is the total of 139. We can go to the next slide. On the next slide, Honorable Chairperson and Members, still on the establishment of VFRs at police stations. There is a medium-term plan to establish VFRs per province, which is the remaining total of 139. On the medium term, for 2022 to 2023, Honorable Chairperson, there will be 20, but and also for 2023 to 2024, it will be 60. And then 2024 to 2025, it actually will be 59. But our supply chain management and all repairs are working towards ensuring that the sooner we have this outstanding victim-friendly rooms established, if we can establish as many as possible in the first and the next financial year, I think they are also looking at that possibility. There's a breakdown according to the provinces. We can go to the next slide, Honorable Chairperson. On the next slide, ensuring an adequate supply of sexual offense evidence kits, availability of evidence collection kits at provisioning stores as of the 5th of September 2022. We have the blue color there, actually D1, which is adult sexual assault evidence collection kit. The total there for Pretoria that is available is 25,137, and then followed by for D7 for pediatric sexual of evidence collection kit, the total there is actually standing at 20,717. And with the KZN having for D1, 3,016, and then for D7, 738, and then also followed by Western Cape, D1, 1,495, and then for D7, 663. And then ensuring an adequate supply, on the next slide, Honorable Chairperson, ensuring an adequate supply of sexual offense evidence kits, availability of evidence kit collection kits in provinces. There is a breakdown for D1. There, the highest number there is at KZN for D1 with more than 19,000. For D7 is more than 12,000. Followed by respectively Western Cape and Gauteng. Western Cape for D1 is 16,000, and then for D7, 12,000, and Gauteng, D1, 11,000, D7, 12,000. And the rest of the other provinces is 5,000 and below. We can go to the next slide, Honorable Chairperson and members. Ensuring an adequate...
What is D1 and D7?
D1, Honorable... Chairperson and members, D1 is adult sexual assault evidence collection kit. Then D7 is for pediatric sexual assault evidence collection kit, Honorable Chairperson.
Okay. I was trying to understand, because adult sexual assault, according to me, it's not the abbreviation, but... So I wanted that explanation from you. But thank you so much. You may proceed.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Ensuring adequate supply of sexual offences evidence kits, outstanding deliveries of evidence collection kits from suppliers. The ordered, Honorable Chairperson and Members, we ordered 51,000 for D1. It was 51,138. And for D7, ordered was 30,330, and then delivered, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, is 22,000, for D1 is 22,379, for D7 is 22,249. Then outstanding, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, for D1 is 28,759, and then for D7 is 8,081. We can go to the next slide. On the next slide, Honorable Chairperson and Members, is dealing with the training of SAPS members to adequately deal with GBVF cases. The SAPS provides two categories of GBF-related training to its members, which is both proactive and reactive. And then just to mention a few for proactive GBF-related training interventions, we have dignity, diversity, and policing, which is a new course, and then human rights and policing, victim empowerment and training program, children and youth at risk, first responder to sexual offenses learning program, and then for reactive GBF-related training programs, vulnerable group is an entry level, and vulnerable group is for there's also for post basic. Basic course in hostage and suicide negotiation, family violence, child protection and sexual offenses is one of the learning programs, domestic violence learning program, psychologically motivated crime course, sexual offenses for investigating officers, resolving crime skills program, and then the taking of buccal samples. Those are some of the training interventions that are related to GBVF. And then we'll go to the next slide, Honorable Chairperson and members. The training of members to adequately deal with GBVF-related cases, the total number of SAPS members trained in proactive GBVF-related training programs as at 31st of August 2022, only currently active members. We can see that for trained members, the blue color signifies the trained members. We can see that the highest numbers that have been trained there is the first responder to sexual offenses learning program, which is 27,000. Trained and declared competent is 27,798, followed by the highest number, which is victim empowerment training program, trained is 23,294, followed by declared competent, which is 23,016. And then from there, then the next one is human rights and policing, trained is 19,567, followed by declared competent is 19,199. Those are just to mention a few. And on the next slide also, Honorable Chairperson, we can see that the highest number that has been also trained there is on vulnerable groups entry level, which is trained 79,903 and declared competent 79,808, followed by vulnerable groups post-basic. The first one was for entry level. The second one is for post-basic. Which is for trained is 41,819, followed by declared competent 41,684. And then the highest number also there is on domestic violence learning program, which is for trained is 47,447, and then declared competent is 46,901. And also the highest number is on buccal samples, trained standing at 41,650 and declared competent 41,626. Just to mention those few, the rest of the others, they are on from 18,000 resolving of crime trained and then declared competent 17,000 and then below, which is your 9,000 and the 3,000 respectively. We can go to the next slide, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. On the next slide, Honorable Chair and Members, implemented initiatives to restore normal functioning at the Forensic Science Laboratory. It is about the capacitation of the Forensic Science Laboratory with adequate personnel to meet the demand for forensic products. These critical positions at senior management level were filled, which is of the component head. General Mulauzi was appointed, and then the section head for biology, Brigadier Shalele, was also appointed. And then a total of 73, which is 47 interns and 26 contractors are still being utilized in the business value chain with an intent of absorption into the work stream prior to the end of the term of contract. And then the contract ends in as of 2022 December, and the process of absorption is at an advanced stage. Furthermore, 34 posts for forensic analysts to capacitate Eastern Cape DNA expansion, which is 28, and Western Cape biology 6 will be filled shortly. We can go to the next slide. On the next slide, Honorable Chairperson and members, implemented initiatives to restore normal functioning at Forensic Science Laboratory continues. Additional equipment was procured for Forensic Science Laboratories, Western Cape FSL 8 thermoshakers, and then 10 centrifuges, and then also crime index, CI lane, two genetic analyzers were also acquired. For Gauteng FSL, 12 thermoshakers were also procured, also including the 12 centrifuges. And then including the crime index, which is the CI lane, and then three genetic analyzers were also acquired respectively. We can go to the next slide, Honorable Chairperson and members. It's still the continuation of the implemented initiative to restore normal functioning at FSL. Critical contracts were also established and will be proactively managed through the our approved contract management strategy. The procurement of silica membrane-based purification kit for genomic DNA biology at both Gauteng and Western Cape FSLs, and also the procurement of consumables for biology, Gauteng and Western Cape FSLs, and also just to mention also a few procurement of consumables used in the semi-automated DNA processing system RI and CI lanes, including the validation and training thereof. And also, lastly, just to mention a few, procurement of manual and semi-automated DNA processing system for the regional laboratory Eastern Cape. And then the others are just for maintenance, repair, service, and calibration of laboratory instruments, removal of hazardous waste from the FSL, just to mention a few. Then we can move to the next slide, Honorable Chairperson. On the next slide, Honorable Chairperson and members, the progress made with the elimination of DNA backlog, the finalization rate, which reflected in percentages, represents entries registered versus entries finalized per quarter, including those on hand which are backlogged. A finalization rate above 100% indicates that backlogged entries are also being finalized. This approach is used for monitoring purposes until such time that as the backlog is eradicated. The finalization rate has increased progressively from 21.48% in quarter one of 2021 and 2022 financial year to 160.75% in quarter one of 2022-23 financial year, and currently is at 180.22%. The backlog status was 241,152 in quarter one of 2021-2022 financial year, and 143,795 in quarter one of 2022-2023 financial year, which is a reduction of 40.37%. Currently, the backlog status is at 88,374 as on 22-09-02, which is a reduction of 38.54% from quarter one of 2022-2023 financial year. We can go to the next slide. On the next slide, Honorable Chairperson, progress made with the elimination of the DNA backlog. We can see that it's just the depletion of the colors on the extreme left, registered, finalized, and on hand. So the blue color is registered, and then and then followed by finalized, and then the gray color is also on hand. We can see that registered for quarter one, 2021-2022, is on a blue color. And then we can see that there on hand, we still have 21.48% with a gray color. And then also quarter two, 2021-2022, it's at 94.26%. And then this is the DNA finalization analysis finalization rate, Honorable Chairperson and members. And then when you go to quarter three, 179.52%, quarter four of 2021-2022, 88.81%, and then quarter one of 2022-23, 160.75%. July 2022, 209.48%, and then August 2022, 210.82%, and then September 22, we also there sitting at 102.05 on hand, and then when you look at the far right, the two colors there. Which is the blue color registered, followed by the finalized, then we can see that so far finalized is at 180.22%. Then we can go to the next slide, Honorable Chairperson and members. On the next slide is the progress made with the elimination of the DNA backlog, the status of the DNA backlog. The graph shows where we were in quarter one from the 2020-21 up to when you go to 2 September 2022. When we started it, we were at 241,152,000, and then currently as at the 2 of September, then it is at 88.374%. We can go to the next slide, Honorable Chairperson and members. Is progress made with the elimination of the DNA backlog? Since the establishment of the NPA SAPS project, whereby we're prioritizing the NPA cases in a project which was established in July 2021, a total of 14,015 cases were prioritized for analysis as per court-directed requests, with the highest number there being for Eastern Cape at 3,623, followed by Limpopo 1,165, and then Gauteng 1,790, and also Mpumalanga 1,051, Northwest 1,145, and then the other provinces, Free State 987. And then Gauteng North 758, Gauteng South 1,790, and then Eastern Cape 658. Just to mention those. So the total there is that for the period August 2021 to August 2022, the total that was finalized is actually the total as of July 2021 is actually the 14,015. We can go to the next slide, Honorable Chairperson and members. Update on the SAPS intervention to ensure the successful implementation of the Criminal Law Forensic Procedures Amendment Act 37 of 2013. The National Forensic DNA Database, NFDD, was established in terms of the Act and has been successfully used as an investigative tool in the identification of serial rapists and murderers and multiple offenders. The National Forensic DNA Database has a maturity number of forensic DNA profiles loaded of more than 1 million active forensic DNA profiles. And then since the inception of the Act to date, comparison searches on the National Forensic DNA Database have yielded where, for example, 15,043 DNA for person to crime, non-person, forensic DNA investigative leads, and then also for 8,738 DNA crime to crime, unknown persons, forensic DNA investigative leads. Division Human Resource Development has trained a total of 41,650 authorized persons to take the buccal samples. That is our submission, Honorable Chairperson and members. Thank you, National Commissioner. I hand back to you, sir.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much for the presentation. Honorable members, let's allow Justice to present. Then we'll take, we'll discuss on and ask questions.
Chair, before Justice, if we may allow, the ministers connected now. Né?
Oh, okay.
I just thought I must let you know because we had agreed he will make his comments after the presentation.
No, thank you so much, DM. Honorable Minister, good evening.
Happy good evening, Chair and the members.
Yeah, we're looking for you, but I understand that you were kicked out by network. Maybe you'll speed up the process of load shedding then.
Chair,
you can advise better for us to, to be assisted with load shedding. You can make input before we give time to Justice to present, because we're looking for you to make your input before the presentation. But because of that, then we agreed that we would give you time the moment you are back.
So, Chair, with respect and all humbleness, maybe why don't, so that you don't break the flow, allow them to present maybe towards the end, we can all round up.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
If it's you saying that we don't have a problem, then we'll continue.
Okay.
Department of Justice, DM.
Chair,
you can
thanks.
Take us through.
Yeah, thanks. I'm with the Director General, Advocate Mashabane, and Advocate Kambula, who I think is well known to you. But the issue that we were asked to present on was to give a briefing on the re-establishment of sexual offences courts, in brackets, Matso courts, eliminating gender-based violence and femicide case backlogs and interventions needed to address areas of dysfunction. Advocate Kambula will go through the presentation, but just by way of background, we had sexual offences courts being established in the country in the early 2000s at a regional court level. Sexual offences cases are either dealt with at a regional court or a high court level, not at the district court level. And more specialised courts were set up on an informal basis in the early 2000s. There wasn't a lot of buy-in from the regional magistrates, many of whom complained that it was too traumatic to hear these cases day in and day out, and they'd rather be mixing them with other cases. And the then Minister of Justice, Jeff Khadebe, set up a committee, the Ministerial Advisory Technical Task Team on Sexual Offences, or MATSO. And they came out with a report, Advocate Kambula can correct me when she speaks, either 2013 or 2014, which recommended the continued, or that sexual offences courts should be re-established, and setting out the minimum standards that were needed. and courts, different regional courts were equipped throughout the country on a year-by-year basis for this. And again, Advocate Kambule will run through this in her presentation. Parliament then in 2015 made an amendment to the Sexual Offences Act, Section 55A, where the minister needed to designate the sexual offences courts. And there was provision for regulations to be tabled by the minister, setting out now in regulation the minimum requirements for a sexual offences court, and that was done. We then run into a problem with the designation because the intention of the legislative parliament was for specific courts or places of sitting to be designated so that members of the public could know, or victims, survivors could know what was a sexual offences court and therefore what additional resources, facilities could they expect there. The problem is that the legal opinion in terms of the wording of Section 65A is that the minister can only designate, because there's only effectively one regional court per province, the minister can only designate the regional court. So he would be then having to designate the regional court of Gauteng, which isn't going to give people an idea of which are the courts that have got facilities. So we are looking, I mean, the issue is still being discussed with the minister, but we are also looking at an amendment to Section 55A to clarify that. But Chair, having given that by way of background, if I can firstly ask the DG, if he won, well, I think I should ask the DG to take over and to then introduce Advocate Kambule. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you
very much. And thanks, Chair. I won't waste much time. I'll ask Advocate Kambule. I think we already have the presentation on the screen to proceed and take us through the presentation and the comment. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Advocate.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DM, for the presentation, and thanks to the members for giving us this opportunity, and also to DG and the minister and the DMs who are in here. So the introduction has already been given. So us here, let me just try to get them. So these are the issues that we'll be talking about, is to give the update of the sexual offences court, where we are, as we are in transition from the Matso courts, that's the way that we're calling them, and moving now to the Section 55 capital A sexual offences court. So I'll be dealing with all those issues, the category of support services that are offered at these courts, and the issues that relate to the backlog of these cases, sexual offences, and also the challenges that we're experiencing. Now, Chair, the first is to say that, as DM has already indicated, that when we came up first with the sexual offences courts as a homegrown model, other countries now are moving through to learn from South Africa about how we have actually established these courts and the support services that we are providing and the impact thereof. So the Matsos, we started with the Matsos, that is in 2013, with the Matsos Sexual Offences Court model that was outlining the service package that we should be providing when the victims are coming through. And so now in 2018, women, as we know, that they took to the streets and they gave the president 24 demands. And from the first summit that we had in 2018, one of the resolutions was that these courts must be backed up by a piece of legislation. But when that demand was coming, it was a matter that the department was already working on. Hence now, with effect from the 7th of February 2020, we have now Section 55, Capital A of the Criminal Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act that gives recognition to this court and actually define what a sexual offences court should be. And the same provision, it also required the minister to produce the regulations relating to sexual offences courts, and that was done on the 7th of February 2020. The regulations started then it was the commencement date for the implementation of the regulations. So the regulations then are coming in to provide the catalogue of support services, to give us the resource pack for this sexual offences court. So replacing what we were previously calling the MATSO sexual offences court model. And then in 2019, we had then the Presidential Summit Declaration Against Gender-Based Violence and Femicide that has Article 15, which recognizes the sexual offences court and other infrastructural resource for support services for the survivors of sexual offences. Now, Section 55, Capital A, so what it means then, I'm moving from this premise that now we have the statutory sexual offences court in terms of Section 55, introduced by Section 55. So Section 55, Capital A, Subsection 1, Subsection 2 says that the minister may by notice in the Gazette designate any division of the High Court of South Africa or the main seat or any local seat of a division referred to in Section 6 of the Superior Courts Act or a magistrate court as defined in Section 1 of the Superior Courts Act at which a sexual offences court must be established. What it means is that it empowers the minister to designate the courts where the sexual offences court must be established. Now, Section 55, Capital A, Subsection 5, also then recognizes all courts that have the jurisdiction of dealing with sexual offences matters to be able then to proceed with these matters, irrespective of whether they are, I mean, those courts that have not been established as sexual offences courts. So what it means is that, as DM has said in his introduction, that we have not yet started with the designation process because of the issues that relate to the interpretation of the provision, Section 55, Capital A, as he has said. But then that does not mean that there are no courts that are providing these services. We had at the time of the commencement of the implementation of Section 55, Capital A, that was on the 7th of February 2020, we had a volume of 106 sexual offences courts. So those courts are still continuing with those services. As you'll see there on the screens, reflected 102 is because we had four of them coming down because of the having less volume or caseload for these cases. So now we have 102 MATSO sexual offences courts. In terms of Section 55, Capital A, Subsection 5, Chair, they are still allowed then to share these matters, and including all other courts that have the jurisdiction, which is in the country, we have a capacity of 299 courts that can hear sexual offences matters, and they are continuing with that. So it did not actually hinder or stop the courts, the designation process from the court dispensing these services to victims of sexual violence. Now, we also then, in the previous financial year, moved on, as I said, that we have the regulations that are specifying the support services that the victims must be provided with. So we moved on and aligned 83 courts to make them compliant with the regulations to provide all those support services. And what is new that has been introduced by the regulations, which the Master Sexual Offences model did not provide, where the support services that related to older persons and persons with disability. So now the regulations then have got regulations that require that we provide those services. And we took then that model that is in the regulations and we develop a model for the disability centric and using it as a base. And from that, then we took 79 of the MATSO courts and we converted them into disability-centric sexual offences courts so that they provide then those services for the survivors with disabilities. And also, this is also going to be, it's also in compliance with the Criminal Related Matters Amendment Act, which is one of the three GBV that Parliament passed and started to be implemented on the 5th of August. So the 79 courts are also compliant with that legislation. So now, out of the 299 courts in the country that are providing, that are hearing these matters, sexual offences, one or two of them then provide the catalogue of the victim support services. And I would also like to say that these we also developed the national guidelines for the establishment of the sexual offences courts so as to simplify the regulations and make to ensure that there's uniformity in the implementation of the regulations and not only the uniformity, but the collaboration between the stakeholders, because with the sexual offences court, you have the SAPS, you have the social development, you have the NPA, the judiciary, all working together in collaboration. So then in March 2020, the designation process, the chair, it requires that the minister must designate this court in consultation with the Chief Justice. So meaning that the minister cannot do the designation until he has received concurrence from the Chief Justice. So we received that concurrence letter that was in March 2020 from the Chief Justice. Now this is the national footprint of these courts per province. So in Matso, the Matso courts, we have the breakdown of 106, that is as at the 31st of January 2020. But as I've indicated that now there are 102. And then you have then the courts that are in line with the sexual offences court regulations, which are 83. And then when we establish these courts, we ensure that then we have that collaboration with the NPA so that there is that seamless support a service operation that is between the Thuthuzela Care Centres. As you know, that the Thuthuzela Care Centres are feeding into our courts. So we want to create that continuum of support services so as to reduce then the level of secondary traumatization in the criminal justice system. So we align then the sexual offences courts with the Thuthuzela Care Centres. So now currently in the country, we have 60 Thuthuzela Care Centres, but 51 of those are aligned with the 83 that we will be establishing soon. Now, these are the support services that are provided by these courts, all right? And the reason for that is because, you know, the act of sexual violence is quite intrusive. It's a serious violation of one's privacy, and it leaves one with it's got psychological impact. and that often leaves the victim with the fear and anxiety, post-trauma, stress disorder, depression, and some will have that low self-esteem, social adjustment and issues, and others will also be left with sexual dysfunctions because of one act of sexual violence. So then we have to have courts. The purpose of these courts is to give them that solace, is to convert the court environment, take out that element of the character when one comes to the court, there's always that nebulous character in our court environment. So these courts then are intended to reduce that secondary traumatization, remove then the issue of victims not knowing how to navigate the court system and so on. So now they provide that catalog of all those that is before the testimony. There's court preparation service that is being offered, which is intended then to deal with the emotions of the victim, and then during the testimony, then we provide then the private testifying services and also the intermediary services for children and now with the amendment that we have, the Criminal and Related Matters Amendment Act, which now extend the intermediary service now to older persons. And also, you know, children are allowed then to use the anatomical directed dolls as testimony assistive tools, where children are unable to articulate a sexual act because they don't have a language for that. So then they are able then to demonstrate using the AD dolls. And after the victim has testified, then we provide the post-trial emotional containment service, and of course we provide the witnesses, and there's also the referral where then there's a need for that. So these are is that a package of the support services that are offered in the sexual offences court. Now, to give you the mental view of how they look, you'll see that the first photograph there is about the magistrate is sitting on the bench. We have introduced then that screen that is there, which is intended to make them the magistrate to be able to see the demeanor of the victim as the victim testifies, the close view of that as a witness is testifying in the private a testifying room. And the next picture there that is adjacent, it is the private testifying room. And then we have the waiting area that is for the children and also for older persons, I mean for adult witnesses. Now, in terms of the court performance, so now this is the statistics that we have received from the NPA. It's comparing the performance of 2020-21 and 2021-2022. As you'll see, the first is about the courts that are fed by the TCCs, that is the 55 TCCs, now 60 TCCs. Starting from the previous financial year. So in 2020-21, 993 cases were finalized with a verdict. So it means that it's cases that were actually tried. There was trial that went on. And in 2021-2022, we see an increase in the number of those cases and move to 1,346. And the conviction rate moving from 73.9 to 76.7. That is of all then these cases that are dealt by the Tutuzela case centers and then moved to the sexual offences court and other courts that are dealing with sexual offences. Life imprisonment, there's an increase. There was an increase in 2021-2022 of 42.5. What it means then is that this is a picture that actually shows that when you have a dedicated focus on matters of sexual offenses, because the purpose of the sexual offenses court is to give that dedicated focus to ensure that the speedy finalization of these cases, there's also an improved prosecution, improved adjudication of these cases, and most importantly is to reduce and eliminate the incidence of secondary traumatization. So when you have that, then you are able to produce good results. Now, the second bar, it shows then that the performance of all courts of, that is all the regional courts that are dealing with sex crimes. So now, that is the national, those that are not on, that are, it includes the ones that are fed by the TCCs and others and the rest of the courts that are dealing with sexual offenses. So the completion rate 2020-21, 75.8, and then it was reduced to 73.8. All right, but when you see those ones that are fed by the TCCs, then the conviction rate moved up. So what it means is that we really need to give that dedicated focus in those matters. Now, moving then to the top three sexual offenses registered by our courts, we have a situation in our country which has been moving consecutively of having rape, and rape is the most serious of all the sexual offenses that we have, and it's always top in South Africa. And in the previous financial year, from the caseload of sexual offenses that were reported in our courts, I mean, sorry, were registered in our courts, 73.9 of those were rape matters. So what it means is that there is a problem in our country, and that the next top offense is sexual assault, and the third one is statutory rape. What it means is that there's too much violence that is perpetrated against children. Now, moving to backlog cases of in sexual offenses, then for the period, the 1st April to 31st July. So in sexual, the first thing that I will say is that in the country, we don't have a specific crime called gender-based violence. But a task team was set that is looking at identifying all the offenses that we have, common law offenses, statutory offenses that have an element of gender-based violence. So there's a first draft that has been produced by that committee. It's a task team that is constituted by the judiciary, the NPA, and also the Department of Justice. We also have the representation from the civil society organization. So to identify all those cases so that we are able then to quantify the incidence of gender-based violence and femicide in our country. Now, in terms of, because we don't have the specific offense called gender-based violence, currently in the department, we are collecting statistics for sexual offenses and also for domestic violence. And then the NPA is also collecting statistics for femicide. And that is where we're going to be confining ourselves in terms of giving you the view of where we are in terms of the backlog cases. Now, in 1st April 2020 to 31st July, we had a pending caseload of 16,781 cases, which are for the sexual offenses. And then out of those, 6,026 cases are classified as the backlog cases. But of course now, that number definitely it has reduced. And out of the caseload that was registered, that is as at the 31st of July 2020, 39.5 of those were the backlog cases. And so the NPA then reported that they finalized during the same that period 1,994 cases out of 2,673 cases that were finalized with a verdict. And these ones were also finalized with a conviction. So they achieved then from those cases during this period, 74.6 a conviction rate. And Chair, as you know, that we have been having these reports coming from the NPA to say that a lot of cases have been delayed by, you know, the late submission of the DNA reports. But we have had here, quite admirable progress that that SAPS has done in this area. But I would like to say that in 2021-2022, our deputy minister approached the department, the DM of police, and then they set up that collaborative that was reported on here to ensure that the collaborative between SAPS and NPA, and NPA to ensure that then there's a reduction of the backlog cases. This number that I am reporting on here, it is for the previous financial year, that the NPA received the 7,618 DNA report, but those were exclusively for sexual offences matters. And so we saw then quite a huge relief in terms of the case backlogs in our courts because of that performance. And now the department also then moved on to ensure that then we reduced the backlogs because we accumulated more backlog volume from the COVID-19 stop and goes that we had. So then the department had to intervene, and a committee was set that was chaired by our deputy minister, and it culminated in the development of what we call the criminal case backlog action plan, which gives then priority to gender-based violence related matters. So there's a committee. This action plan is monitored by the criminal case backlog committee, which meets every month. And as a department, we have also ensured that we include in our APP an indicator that speaks to the reduction of the backlog case matters. Now, coming to domestic violence and femicide. So in domestic violence, the cases that were registered is 3,856 during this period. And then out of those, then the backlog were 348, but only criminal matters. And then 1,767 were finalized with a verdict, meaning that there was a trial that went on. Now, coming to femicide, as reported by the NPA, 284 cases of femicide matters that are GBV related were finalized with a verdict during this period, and 271 matters out of the 284 were finalized with a conviction. So the NPA achieved a conviction of 93.2 of all these cases. Of the intimate partner femicide cases. So out of the 284, 221 of those cases were the intimate partner femicide. So what it means is that it is the highest of all in South Africa, is intimate femicide in the matters that are GBV related femicide matters. So 206 of the 221 were finalized with a conviction that gave them that 93.2 conviction rate, which is quite a good percentage. Now, I would like to say, Chair, that we might have all these plans as a department, but I would like just to raise it here that as a department, we are mainly focusing on the administrative implementation of the legislation and the administration of the courts. And so the NPA is responsible for the prosecution of matters. And then you have the judiciary that is responsible for the adjudication of matters. Then you have the SAPS that is bringing their cases to us and are responsible for the investigation and ensuring that the case is trial ready for prosecution. So all these stakeholders, then there are deficiencies that are systematic that actually contribute in the delays in the finalization of these cases. So it's not one department that can actually deal with these issues. There are core drivers for case backlogs that are contributed by the different criminal justice actors. So for this reason, then we need to have that collaboration by all relevant actors to ensure that then we are able then to create that seamless intervention process that will actually identify where the stoppers are and be able to remove them. So now the department is in the process of establishing the National Integrated Criminal Court Optimization Steering Committee. This will be done with the support of our ministry. Now, this is my last slide in terms of the challenges that we're experiencing. As DM said at the beginning, that we have not designated the courts. And this designation, it is a designation that it's something that is technical, because the people out there, what they want sexual offenses courts. They want to go to courts that will be providing them with support services. They want justice. They want justice in an environment that understands their pain and be able then to address the mixture of emotions that they come with when they come into the court environment. That's all that they want. So they don't even understand what we're talking about designation. So as a department, then, as I said, that we decided that we want to give people what they need, and all the courts are providing these services. And of course, as I have said, that it is 102 of the 299 that have the catalog of these services that actually provide support, emotional support mainly, and excluding to eliminate the secondary traumatization of these victims by the system. So the takeaway here, Chairperson, is to say that we are providing services. We're not waiting for the designation. We are giving people what they are looking for. And the second limitation that we have is we have been having, the breaking of the systems, and this, it got to news and to a certain extent. So there are interventions that have been done, Chairperson. The problem is still there. We are still having systems that are breaking. And what we have done now with the coming in of the Criminal and Related Matters Amendment Act, which started then to be operational on the 5th of August, this is an act that recognizes virtual proceedings. So meaning that now it would be possible for a victim to testify in a place of your comfort. You don't need to come to court. So when they were saying that, let's use then the platforms that we have, your Teams, your Zoom, to ensure that we get the victim. There is no case that is postponed because of a system that is broken. And also, the department has got a service provider that has been hired to repair the broken systems. And also there is a task team that is meeting between DOJ and DataCentric to ensure that then the outputs are being monitored, the quality work and the turnaround time is also met. But I would like to say, Chairperson, that the problem is still there. But now we have found ways of addressing it, so that we don't have more backlog matters in this, particularly in cases that involve children. And I would also like to say that in terms of Section 55 Capital A, there's a provision there that requires the judiciary to develop directives And these directives must give priority to cases of sexual violence. And they've done their draft, and they've started then to ensure that cases that involve children are set during the time of the school holidays, and checking, you know, the pressure from school and connecting with the principals and so on, so that children are able to testify. And now we are working with the TCCs to, and with this act now being in implementation, that we have then children will be testifying at the TCCs, all right, so as to minimize the trauma that one would have, you know, when they appear before court. And there are still backlog cases of sexual offenses, and but as I have said, that the core drivers for this challenge are as a result of the systematic deficiencies that are contributed by the various criminal justice actors. And I mentioned here that a steering committee is in the process of being established that will be then be giving support in terms of all these stakeholders working together in one platform to address the issue of the backlog matters. I think this will bring me to an end, Chairperson. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Advocate. Thank you for your presentation. Let me take this opportunity and invite the Minister to give inputs. Thereafter, I'll let the honorable members to engage the report, the two presentations. Thank you so much, Honorable Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, the members and members, the deputy ministers that are here, and ministers if they are. Sorry that I was not at the beginning. The presentation made by the South African police in many ways is correct, Chairperson. We are coming from afar. We believe that this backlog would be latest by December when you look at the figures as we eat going down. More than anything, Chairperson, we're working on the system that we never go back there. I don't know how we arrived there, but ours is that we don't go back there. There are a few things that have happened. They were made in the presentation, but it will be the emphasis to say, Chairperson, there were 16 contracts that were not signed as we discover this problem. Why those contracts were not signed, were not renewed up to this point, nobody has explained that. All they are signed, well monitored, and renewed. We work within 6 months. The latest is 3 months before it expires, so that it doesn't happen again. That's a capacity that we want to keep on these contracts. But other thing, those contracts were dealing with machines in the laboratory. When we visited laboratories at the time, we would find that all machines are indicated red because all of them were not working. Not a single one is not working now. The maintenance is there on those contracts, is doing very well. Both laboratories, especially Western Cape and Gauteng, Pretoria. So the capacity of the human capacity has been enhanced. We found that about in Western Cape alone, 24 interns and people that were working on that environment were thrown away. We were told that the Inkhayelitsha and all that, we have managed to collect 20 of them back. Four of them are doing the other jobs. They could not come back, but they are in the system. In Pretoria, we have brought 8 back. Chairperson, what we are doing is that they should be absorbed, as the presentation has said, were absorbed. They never get out of the system, so that the capacity is forever there and we don't go back there. The contracts of the chemicals are there, and we are working closely to monitor that chemicals never got out of the system again. The buccal samples, D7, D1, I have the police stations, they are monitored very closely. Top 30 stations, Chairperson, that lead when it comes to the sexual offences are given an extra cash to keep at the station level so that they can bypass all these red tapes when they're supposed to purchase anything that happens. But besides that, we buy enough, we keep them enough, they are heavily monitored, and that they don't get out of the system, and they are forever there. So the working relationship created by deputy ministers, both John Jeffries, Deputy Minister Matale, on working of lifting up those cases that are red when it comes to NPA, but it is a question of DNA. 14,000, as you could see, they have been sent through. We believe that latest by December, we would have done away with the backlog and we'll be working on day-to-day submission. One other thing, later this year, we expect the laboratory of Eastern Cape PE to be full functional. It has been under construction for last 2.5 years. We've been full function. And the biggest backlog in Western Cape, Chairperson, is an Eastern Cape samples. Once Eastern Cape is able to do their own, Western Cape will run with their own, and Eastern Cape will do their own. The problem that we are facing is a little bit now is the capacity of KZN, which is very low. We have a problem there. Our main problem is the Department of Works that is supposed to be working on our buildings. The laboratory we have at Manzimtoti at the present moment has flooded 4 times. Now is the rainy season again. We know it's going to be flooded. We have been requesting that it should be moved. There are hiccups that you can't mention. You can't put your finger on the pulse. Why are we can't move? So that capacity, Chair, it gives us not to be able to sweep quickly at this backlog. But with the Eastern Cape one, which Eastern Cape will help us with KZS, and if needs be. For instance, those that capacity of KZN of machines and the space, we have moved people to Western Cape, human beings to work on the capacity in that place. So we are very comfortable that the backlog is going to go. The latest is December, and then we'll deal with the day-to-day submission. On training, Chairperson, those figures have been given, those are the people that are working at the station level to work with the trauma, the second victimization, people that will be permanently on those desks, and they understand the pain of the people that will be sent. Don't tell them to go back to negotiate and all those kind of things. We are also trying to work on the sign language to improve the situation there so that people with disabilities on those are helped when it comes to that one. So we are trying to work on that. We are enhancing our FCS. As we speak, we're training about 337 from those students that are in college. As we speak, they are already identified to go and boost up the capacity of the FCS. Chairperson, we have recruited about 200 BSc students that are in training as we speak to be able to go and work on these laboratories. And we want to make sure that the capacity is forever kept, and we make sure that we never go back where we come from. And the better working relationships on the whole chain needs to be improved. We are working on that. But as Advocate Bilankulu said, there are still gaps that sometimes we begin to point fingers to others. We need to sit down and create a seamless movement from point A to point B, which will really help all of us to give and dish the justice for the victims and make sure that all perpetrators are put where they're supposed to be. For now, Chairperson, I'll stop there and allow us ourselves to be able to give answers where the questions are raised. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister. I think your inputs answer some of our questions. I'll now give the time to the honorable members to ask questions. Honorable members, oh, I see a hand of Dr. Thembe Kwayo. Yeah, for now I see Dr. Thembe Kwayo. Oh, and Honorable Sharif. Dr. Thembe Kwayo.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for both presentations that were done. And just to say, I've got only two matters that I would like to speak on. And it's about the establishment of the victims. They call it victims-friendly rooms at police stations, which obviously is much appreciated for such a move that has been done by this department. But to say, on the other hand, we are talking about friendly rooms, and I understand that there is training that is taking place for the police specifically. But my question is, can there be more concentration on changing the existing attitudes of the police, you know, from this negativity of the way they handle the victims of GBV? And sometimes they can make a laughing stock of a very, very serious GBV-related matter. So my request is, can they be trained more on how friendly they also can be in addressing these issues? Because those victims come psychologically shattered. And even though they will be accommodated in those friendly rooms, let's make sure that the personnel or the police that are working there are also working in a friendly mood, respecting the dignity and the diversity of the victims as it may be. That's one thing that I would like to ask the minister to look on. And secondly, to say, is it possible for example, the police are trained, is it possible to have, maybe after 6 months, a debriefing session? A debriefing session is where we check on whether the efforts that we have made in training the police so that they can handle this situation correctly, are there problems? I mean, it's a sort of evaluating the efforts that we have done in training the police. Just to ask the minister to say, is it possible that there can be a debriefing, a continuous debriefing sessions for all officials dealing with the GBV related matters? And to say, do you listen to the complaints of the victims as they complain about the police themselves? To say, a victim goes there being raped, but he ends up also being raped by the very same police where we expect to be helped in the ultimate end. So what is it that you do? Accountability. What is the degree of accountability if such cases are reported to your office. And lastly, to say, who do you contact? Say, for an example, I've got an issue reported to my office to say, this family haven't received any DNA report, so they can't be able to bury the deceased. And it's a long period, say, for an example, 6 months or a year. So some other cases, who do you contact to report such backlogs? And how and then what would be the time of the response? Say, for an example, I'm the one who is inquiring on behalf of that family. We need a number of the person that we can contact. But I think we appreciate it. These are efforts, in actual fact, moving forward towards positive, inclusive information of helping the victims in South Africa. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Tembekwai. Honorable Sharif. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good evening to yourself. Good evening to honorable members, ministers, deputy ministers, and officials, all protocol observed. Chairperson, you must forgive me as I am going to be going through the reports as well as using my iPad on this meeting. So if I go silent for a little bit, just please do bear with me. I'm going to start with Minister Sele, your comments. I note what you're saying. Let me start by saying that absorption of contractors and interns that have already been doing the work and have the experience and institutional knowledge is a very good way to go. I think oftentimes we lose a lot of good people who have good knowledge, who know what to do and who knows what needs to happen, and government departments tend to lose them, and then having to go and find people and retrain them and recapacitate and resource them takes a lot of time, which in turn essentially denies justice to people on the ground. So I just wanted to make that note. Chair, I also wanted to just ask about the KZN lab, if I'm not mistaken, Minister, is at risk and has flooded twice already. And you note that you have requested to get a different site for this lab in order to keep it safer. I just wanted to find out, why is it taking so long and why hasn't it happened already? December backlog will be cleared, Minister. We will hold you to that, and I really hope it does. Wishing you all the luck to make sure that that happens. Chair, I'm going to start with the SAPS report. On a general overview of both reports, I must state my concern in regards to the low numbers. It seems like it's taking too long to get where you need to get. The reduction of backlogs is slow. It had, looking at the DNA backlogs with SAPS, it had a dramatic increase by, almost double, triple the amount. But then year on year, it's less than what it has to be in terms of backlog and in terms of how many cases are being received every day moving forward. So basically, the backlog just continues, to become backlog. And even though you're trying to catch up, violence in this country against women is so bad that hundreds of cases are happening a day, looking at the different domestic violence rates, sexual offenses, sexual harassment, violence against children, and so forth. So I just want to caution both departments that even though you're working on the backlog, it's taking, for me, in my opinion, too slow to catch up, and therefore backlog seems and, will continue happening on a daily basis. Chairperson, in terms of VEP rooms, The department mentioned that SAPS does work with NGOs, and I just wanted to find out how many are they working with. Even if you just give it to me per province, that would be great. The numbers of how many VRFs will be established from 2022 all the way to 2025 seem low, especially the year 2022 to 2023. Only 20 VRF rooms seem to be prioritized. And I just wanted to find out why is it only 20? 20 to me sounds like it's like too little. And I just wanted to find out why is it at that number. In terms of provisioning stores, KZN and Western Cape is very low. Very low. Why are the provisioning stores so low? And what is the plan to increase it? You see, this is a problem. If we don't have rape kits in provision stores, when SAPS when they run low on rape kits and provisioning stores also run low, that's when we have issues. So what is the plan proactively to make sure that this increases? How long do you wait for outstanding deliveries to start of interest sake? And will it be possible for SAPS to provide the multi-party women's caucus with a list of these police stations that do not have rape kits and what is planned moving forward? I'm happy to see that training is becoming more relevant and more important. I agree, training is the benchmark and cornerstone of how we tackle and combat gender-based violence and femicide, specifically looking at GBVF frontline workers. I just want to find out, thank you for giving us the numbers of how many have been trained. I want to find out how many active members are there in total, so I have something to base the numbers on, and also what accounts for the number dropping in terms of being declared competent. So what is the factors on active members of SAPS not being declared competent in comparison to those who register for the courses? I hope that makes sense. In terms of the DNA labs, sorry, I'm just going to go to that slide number 17. When you speak about the backlog will be looked at shortly, what does shortly mean? When you speak about shortly, what is the timeline? Can you give us a timeline for that? And then slide 17, the progress made, the on-hands look very high. Can you just give me an explanation of what on-hand means? Just because I don't understand it completely. And then if you look at slide 19, it speaks about the court request for DNA that's being prioritized. How far is this? Because you just give us the numbers of those that are being prioritized, but how far is the request? So, and what is the numbers looking at in terms of processing and moving forward? Okay, then the Department of Justice presentation. I'm just quickly going through my notes. Okay, the numbers confuse me a little bit, advocate, because you say that there are no SOCs. Okay, cool. You explained the reasons for that, but you say that 299 courts on a regional division is working in order to ensure that courts are that sexual offense matters are being heard in the court. You then speak about 102 of those 999 being macho, 79 of those 299 are disability centric, and 83 of those 299 are compliant. These numbers seem a little bit confusing to me. Can you just clarify to me so I can understand it? You then speak about 51 TCCs. What about the other 9? Are they going to be aligned to court? What is the plan there? You speak about services for persons with disabilities. What other services are you providing? It's awesome to see sign language, and I just want to know what is the prevalence of that, and is there enough sign language interpreters to assist? You speak about post-trial emotional containment services. I'm interested to know, out of the number of survivors that go through the system, how many of those go to post-trial emotional containment? Advocate, this is important, Deputy Minister, because it's interesting to note how many go through the system and then get the support needed, because trauma is something that as South Africans, we struggle with every single day, and almost all of us struggle with trauma and not necessarily have access to mental health assistance to be able to deal with those traumas. I'm concerned, advocate, around the decrease of numbers from last, so a decrease this year from last year, around the figures you gave on convictions of all courts, that is in your presentation. And then I'm interested just in terms of the way you put the presentation together. Why is the last column of the top three courts changes? It goes from numbers in the first column and then to percentages in the second column. Can you just explain that? Again, why do the numbers of convictions look so low? Gender-based violence and femicide is a pandemic in this country. So your numbers feel low to me, and I just need some assistance with understanding that. Can the Multi-Party Women's Caucus get a presentation on the backlog action plan? I'd be interested to see that. And Deputy Minister, I must say I'm worried on the dysfunctional SOS and the backlogs. This concerns me because being in the GBVS field and being an activist and dealing with stakeholders, this is the number one complaint that I receive, that cases are continuously being postponed, which means perpetrators are able to walk the streets and re-victimize the victims. And this is a massive concern for South Africa, is if we can't find optimal ways to protect the SOS and ensure that cases are not postponed, justice is denied. And I really urge you to please look at this, prioritize it, and come up with a plan that ensures that justice is not denied. I'll stop there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sharif. Honorable Sivija.
Thank you very much, Chair. I've got load shedding. You'll forgive me if I got cut. Just to join the members to welcome the presentation, and my apology for joining the meeting late. I was in another meeting, but just to acknowledge and welcome the progress that has been made by both the advocate and the minister. Actually, it's impressive that we have moved from where we are to a situation where we are closing the gaps that previously we could identify. And one chair welcome the work that has been done by the men and women in blue. Just to check on the dealing with the trauma of families that get affected by the act of gender-based violence. I see that there is still a lack, we're still lacking as government, just to keep the community or the family informed about the processes. I had two cases in my constituency. Unfortunately, it's even my family. One has been killed, the other one, both of them, they've been killed. The other one was beaten and later on died. But the police has never interacted with the family, and you could see that the trauma that is still with the family. And my view is that though it might be the work of social workers, but the police has to lead the process, particularly because the victim, the people who have committed crime have not been arrested. How do we make sure that the family themselves, they are comforted and they start to believe in the process of government? The second issue, Chair, is on the role of stakeholders like your CP, community forum, working with the police and the community around those affected areas. There is no proper coordination, and I suggest that there should be that coordination where the communities, community forums themselves, they should be able to link as they link with the police, but they need to feedback in with communities around those issues. So those are the issues that I wanted to raise, Chair. but welcoming the presentation and the efforts that the minister and your team you're putting in making sure that you deal with the backlog of this thing of laboratories, because it has been a problem. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Siminya. Maybe one or two issues before I give to the department to respond. I just want to check with SAPS whether the officials in the VFR are able to cater for all survivors, especially for those living with disabilities. For an example, the use of sign language, or for those survivors with hearing challenges. Are our officials trained to do all of them in all police stations where there are this VFRs be able to assist? The last one is in connection with the resource or equipped in all police stations through the provision of training, as well as through availability of sampling kits to ensure compulsory DNA sampling for all those accused and or suspected of committing Schedule 8 offences. Is there a process in place within SAPS to deal with non-compliance to the provision of Forensic Act? And lastly, is there capacity of the forensic science laboratories to speedily process the DNA sampling? Thank you. Can I give to the minister to respond, or the minister, you love to give to the officials, then you will be the last. Any, you can start, or you can give to the officials.
Let me start, Chairperson. The officials.
Okay, thank you.
To good doctor, training of special members. Indeed, we are not there. That also speaks to the last question raised by the chair. We're not there yet on the training and fully capacitating our members at all level with all equipment that they're supposed to be having to deal with these matters. We have pushed the training. The training is at the station level. Why this training at the station level? Because the gender-based violence has been something that whoever is at the community center, SCS, would deal with it without really taking on board the trauma, the pain, and the emotional upheaval that the survivor is facing. So training those people, besides the knowledge and understanding, they will get in the tune of understanding that they are dealing with the people that they really don't need the second traumatization. So we have trained that. One thing that I can simply say, I don't think we are there with the question of the sign language, though we are inviting people that have studied that to be in our some of our police stations, but we are developing our contingent that will be permanent at the police station. I'm not going to be able to say when are we going to have those people at all stations, but now we are prioritizing those top stations where we have more problems when it comes to the gender-based violence. So that's a kind of training. I hope one day we would reach a complete kind of this dealing with this situation. Chairperson, I went to Alexander Police Station. You remember that most of the survivors of Krugersdorp, they came from Alex. So I went to see them, the eight young girls, and their parents. What I saw at Alex was wonderful. There is a friendly room. Next to it, there is a doctor's room. Next to it, there is a social worker room. I think we're far from that. We are having this isolated friendly, but that to me was so much ideal that if most police stations can have that, working, by the way, with the NGOs and the private sector, not necessarily the police, but it's such an ideal and such a good sight to see those dolls almost together, a doctor, social worker, and the room that is run by the members of the South African police. I hope that will take us very far, that happened. Yes, Doc. There is a consequential management, and the police are under strict instruction, the management, the command, to say those some of us as the members of the South African police who do not take this serious task serious, they don't belong to this uniform, they don't belong to this organization. Maybe it will be good if one can work on those that have fallen victims themselves of misbehaving and find themselves ejected and rejected from this organization. I'm simply saying to you, Doc, that there is a consequential management on this one. You are asking where to go. I'm sure you can easily get the number of the minister, deputy minister, but also the all generals nationally. We can make those numbers available to the committee and all provincial commissioners and all the FCS heads in different provinces. I think we can pull together those numbers and give to the committee. By the way, we do have, through your chair, we do have the directory of the South African police numbers of all stations in the Republic of South Africa. Unfortunately, some of those people have moved on, and some have left the system, but ourselves, I think we have produced a very limited number, but there is such a directory where you find every number and the station commander of the in the Republic of South Africa. We can share that, but you can update it as we go forward. This consequence it should be expeditious, but fairly to those people, but more than chasing consequential management, more I think we need to emphasize training and the most members of the South African Police Service to be a part of dealing with the situation rather than putting fear on them. I think we should put more understanding. But if there are those that really, no matter how we try, will never come on board on dealing with this, those indeed will have to be consequential. The question came of the, I think to honorable member, honorable member, why should I forget the name? The question came about KZN Laboratories. The problem there, honorable member, Sharif, is that, as you would know, Amanzimtoti did not just flood twice. It has flooded four times. And we are very sure that as the rain comes again, it will. Machines get spoiled, chemicals get spoiled, and the staff there is underutilized. That's why we've shifted some of the staff from Amanzimtoti to Cape Town. But the movement is not for the South African police, it's for the Department of Public Works. The place has been identified, and you will back and you will really depend on them signing the leases, the movement, and finding those places, converting those places to be proper laboratories. As the members of the South African Police and as an organization, nothing we can do beyond that when the situation is a movement from building to building. There's been a joint meeting between two portfolio committees of the police and the and public works to try to work on those things. It's not only the laboratories. At the police stations themselves, that has the backlog, and the maintenance of the police stations and all that, things like CCTV, things like making police stations safe and all that. I can simply say to you, Chair, on this one, that's one area when it comes to the infrastructure of the police where we're having this rollover year after year because our money there is not utilized by the sister department that is supposed to be helping us on this. So the question of moving laboratories is the question of the sister departments not helping us very, very much. Dealing with this backlog, we are very confident because few things that we have done, maybe one thing that one did not mention, is that we are not working on eight-hour shift day. We are working on 16-hour shift day. We have found the money for overtime so that our staff can work 16 hours rather than 8 hours a day. We are even trying to find more, Chairperson, if we can push it to 24-hour day so that there is no time that is wasted, especially dealing with the dealing with the backlog. Having put money there, having brought human warm bodies back there, but also putting extra hours, we're confident that this will be achieved. Dr. Tenjogar says is looking at that, will hold us at the end of the day responsible of this. We are really prepared and working hard to make sure that this happens. When it comes to these samples, We are trying to keep them at all police stations. I think, again, Honorable Ratif, Honorable Sharif spoke about the lack and the minimum numbers that are there kept at the station and at the wholesale police station. There are two reasons. There is a shortage of supply where we buy. We're told that this is the number that we can find. We find them from one center. Actually, we're trying to find out if we can spread the procurement of these in different provinces. But also, we're very scared of the kind of the quality if it is all over. So that was the first one. But second one, if you overbuy, you overstock, you might face the problem of expiry dates of these metals. So we try to balance this, but we also try to monitor it closely so that it doesn't go completely finished in these police stations. That's what we're trying to work on it, on this matter of supply on these matters. How many? The 14,015 are those that are requested mostly by the prosecution because the cases are ready. They're only short of DNA. That does not mean that we're not pushing DNA generally in the laboratory, but there will be a special request to say, can you work on this one? Those are 14,000. I think the advocate from the Department of Justice gave 7,000 of the previous year, but altogether now there are 14,000. And we are trying hard to work together on those matters. I tried to work to answer on the people living with disabilities. Yes, we haven't done enough, but we are working to make sure that that one is happening. Jefferson, one thing that I want to appeal to all of us. Sometimes we really get frustrated. I'm sure the committee will help us. We do get frustrated by the withdrawals. I'll say it because it's us here, but sometimes when you say this thing, it sounds as if you're finding the excuses. Let me make an example. I think last month, this lady phones me hysterical to say she is in the police station, one of the police stations in Durban. Fortunately, I was in Durban. I did not answer. I took the car. I went to this police station. I called everybody. I called the station commander. The lady was there at 2 in the morning. I called the station commander. I called the district commander. I called everybody. And we worked on that. I was hard on the police. And the lady was quite okay, taken to hospital together with the witness, which is a cousin. 3 days later, I phoned the station commander. How far have we gone with the case? They say the lady have come and they withdrawn the case. So this really happened. That not only Minister of Justice and Minister of Police received again about 2 months ago an SOS. The lady is making a call. This lady works for the government. She was really injured. You could see that she has been abused physically. We sent the police in Mamelodi. This guy is arrested and all. You phone the lady to check how far have we gone. The lady said, Minister, I'm no more staying at home because my mother had put a lot of pressure to me to make sure that I withdraw the case. So I think from ourselves, the public representatives, is one area that we'll have to really work hard on, that families, communities, friends, and everybody help us on these matters so that the victims are not victimized by the people that are supposed to be protecting them. There are victims that are victimized by their own families. Families, they take side of perpetrators rather than the survivors. So I think that's one area that we have to really try together to work on with the families and the communities, the friends, and all those structures that support. It happens on the families. It happens that the person is raped, the matter is taken to the traditional court, and you are given the right to slaughter the goat, and the person has been raped, and it ends there. So I think there should be a lot of social mobilization in understanding that, as you saw, as the advocate Bilankulu was giving us, that people that are found guilty are people that are very close to the perpetrators, and those people found guilty are very close to the victims. Those are the figures we have. The figure we had with the last quarter of last year, that is December, January, February, on the police, 10,000 women were raped in South Africa in 3 months. Exactly 50,000 of 50% of them were raped in their own homes, in their own houses, in the place of where supposed to be safe by the people they know and all that. So when we must respond as the law enforcement, but there is a lot of social mobilization that must be done by all of us to make sure that the women are protected by the people that they know, by the people that they run to when they suppose to be safe with them, but they find that those are perpetrators against them, the uncles, the fathers, the boyfriends, the stepfathers is a big chunk of those perpetrators that we find on the way. Chairperson, there were other questions, specifically the figures and the program of training. I would request that the officials from our side, they will give the answer on that. Thanks very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister. Is there anyone who want to respond to the questions? Or the minister has covered everything?
No, I think if we can allow the National Commission, the team chair, to come in on the issues that the minister didn't talk to. Thank you.
Thank you very much, National Commissioner.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Oh, General Masimule.
Correct, Honorable Chair. Thanks.
Thank you.
I will talk with few. I think the minister covered most. The issue around the attitude of members, we constantly deal with that with training that we do provide, different trainings that we provide to the members. And indeed, we do our best to make sure that the members conform. But now and then, they will always find exceptions. General Mlaudzi, let me talk to the on hand. The stock on hand refers to after you receive a certain number per month, you register it and you process. Then there is a figure that shows is finalized. And then on hand, it means that which you are still going to work on. But General Mlaudzi, I think you will also fill up on that one. And I think basically that is that. General Mashala, you can talk to the NGOs, and then thereafter General Mlaudzi. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Thank you.
the generals.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Honorable Chairperson, on the issue, the SAPS together with Department of Social Development, we're working with the NGOs, which is including some of the organizations such as DIF, SA, to work very closely to address the issue of working with those of our victims with disabilities. And party to that also, members at police stations are also receiving the necessary training to be able to also, as the first line of service at the CSCs, to ensure that they can also be able to actually assist the victims of, especially those with the disabilities. And then the issue of the CPF, indeed, CPFs are actually encouraged. We have a very good, actually one of the best practice actually is in Gauteng, where the Department of Community Safety, together with relevant role players, they have a GBF, gender-based violence brigade, which are actually members coming from the CPS, and it's a very, very, very effective and efficient program. And we're actually looking into those best practices of helping, so that we can also look into the possibility of, as it was shared through the MINMAC, which was convened by the Honorable Minister. So we're looking at those best practices to ensure that other provinces can also assist into that. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Thank you, National Commissioner.
Thank you. The next
thank you, Chair, Honorable Members. I just want to respond on the on-hand. On-hand, Honorable Chair, is actually talking to the total cases that we have nationally that are under biology. It talks to the new together with the old cases, our backlog. That actually, Honorable Chair, it assists us to make sure that we don't go back to your backlog. We are using a double-sided methodology where we are able to analyze the new together with the backlog so that we don't have any accumulation of the backlog. In summary, 125 is a combination of new cases together with the backlog. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, National Commission.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair.
Oh, thank you. Honorable Members, is there something that you want to ask further, or we are satisfied of all the responses that we got?
Chair, I don't know if you were just dealing with police, the police responses, but Honorable Justice. Sharif asked Justice, can we answer those?
Yes, dear.
Okay. If I can start with sorry, I see Honorable Sharif is wanting to speak again. No.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I just needed to get the answer on why is it only 20 victim-friendly rooms that will be prioritized for 2022-2023. I just wanted to know why is it so little in terms of 20. Thanks, Chair.
Oh, thank you very much. GM?
Which one, Chair? There are two. She asked, that's a police question.
Yes.
I thought maybe you will ship in thereafter, they will respond to this.
Oh, okay, all right, no, that's fine. If I can, because they were more detailed questions, if I can ask Advocate Kambula to give the response, I'll add probably at the end.
Thank you, DM. The first question is on to give clarity on all these numbers that are on one slide where we are reflecting the national spread of these courts. What I can say here is we have, this slide is telling us that we have what we call, I'm saying inverted commas, the regional courts. In the country, there are 299. So those are the places of sitting that draw the jurisdiction from the regional division to hear these matters. There are 299 in the country. That is the places of sitting. Then we have then out of those, as we said at the beginning, and DM introduced, you know, the history of us getting to where we are with the Matso courts and so on. So we do have the Matso courts that have the victim-centric model that provides that catalog, that basket of support services for the victims. Currently, we have 102 of those that are in operation. Then that is out of the 299. Then we have then, as I have said, that we then took the model, which is the Matso model, and put it now into regulations. So we have now the regulations that are in encapsulation of the Matso model, but going further than the specifications of the Matso model to accommodate the diversified needs of the victims, like the victim of disabilities, older persons, and so on. So now we started then to align these courts with the regulations, because for a court then to be called a Section 55 Capital A Sexual Offences Court, it must be compliant with the regulations. And the regulations, as I'm saying that, they are giving us the resource needs and the resource specifications for what we can say that it's a sexual offences court. So now we have established, we have aligned then 83 of these courts with the regulations, so that as soon as the designation happens, these 83 courts will be called the Section 55 Capital A Sexual Offences Court. So that's what I was saying. Now, coming then with the disability centric. So we came up as a department, we developed the strategy on reasonable accommodations and measures to access justice for court users with disabilities. Then from that strategy, we developed the minimum standards, the minimum service standards for the strategy. So now we have a set of reasonable accommodations that we introduce and that are in line with the service standards. So they are sort of, they're focusing on four areas, all right? One being to ensure that there's language accessibility. Now I'm also moving now to the second question that says that what builds what we are calling the disability service model. So it focuses on language accessibility. And with language accessibility, that's where then we are saying that this court, it must have a directory of sign language interpreters and also the LEAP speakers, because as we know that, you know, Abantu Bakuti, some of them have not gone to school to learn the sign language. So then we have those then who are able to read the lips, and they speak with their lips, and then and so we, it's a combination then of accredited sign language interpreters and also the lip speak, we are calling them the lip speakers interpreters. So so then that is to ensure the language accessibility in that area. And we are working with the Disability People's Organization, all right? So as and DEFSA as well, so as to have that capacity. And DEFSA has asked us now, I have been informed that they would like to have an MOU with us so that they, we can work, we have a closer relationship. So then the second one then is to look now to those who are visually impaired who are coming to our courts. So we've got Braille that we have developed. But I would like to say, Chairperson, that with the Braille, the challenge that we are having is that, which is something that we are looking at, how do we correct this? We have, you know, our court officials. Our court officials will put heavy stuff, you know, on top of the Braille material that we have developed, and then it sort of then loses the quality and so on, but it's something that we are working on. So we've got Braille. Even the Constitution, Chairperson, we have converted it into a Braille format. We also have the audio and also the large font. So a court that is disability-centric, it must have these resources. And we have a checklist then for us to say at national office that it is compliant. We look at all those resource needs that are in the checklist. And then we also provide then the guide dogs. We have a guide dogs and service animals. So then in the waiting area for the sexual offences court, there is now a signage that is there in the waiting area that's got a mat that is branded for the guide dog, and the bowl is also branded. And we you know, because others, so we have accommodated the other service animals, because they said that it's not only the guide dog that we should be using. Then for the autism spectrum disorder witnesses, we're providing now the intermediary services, because we have amended then our legislation to accommodate now a wider spectrum of disabilities, because previously it was only for persons with mental disabilities. So now the Criminal and Related Matters Amendment Act, it allows now, it permits the gesture language to be considered as viva voce or oral evidence for witnesses who lack the ability to speak, and also to use the demonstrations, the non-verbal expressions and all that, so that we are accommodating those who cannot communicate using the accredited sign language. Then coming to physical accessibility, we ensure that then that court, it must have the ramp. And at first, Chairperson, we also put in the voice command for the lift, but we realized that it might take us long to get to that level, but we do have courts then that's got the voice commands in their lift form for those then who will be needing that support. And we develop then the module. We've got a module for two modules for the intermediary services. So, and both of them, they've got sections that deal with training the intermediaries on how to deal, particularly with the victims with mental disability, autism spectrum disorder, and so that then our intermediaries are able then to work with them. And so each court then that you are calling the disability-centric court, it has what we are calling the reasonable accommodation coordinator. And these are the people that we trained last year. So last year we had 14 sessions where we reached 187 of the reasonable accommodation coordinators. These are the people who are actually guiding these people, ensuring that our service points are also sensitive then to people, to court users with disabilities. Now, moving to what do we have a plan of aligning all these, the Tutuzela care centers with the sexual. Yes, we do have that. Chairperson, there's a revamp now of the Tutuzela care centers. Their services now have been extended from sexual offenses, survivors of sexual offenses, to include now other types of offenses like the domestic violence and so on. So now we want to create and tighten that referral system between the Tutuzela care centers and the sexual offenses court. Now there are 60 in total, starting from the previous financial year. We want to align them and ensure that then the courts that we have are also there. So the plan is there. As I said, that even with the virtual proceedings, we want those victims who cannot testify.
Excuse me, Chairperson, through you. Chairperson?
Yes, doc.
I was just thinking the last respondent is taking too long and is talking about a lot of issues that she could have presented in that document. Seriously, I think we have got the answers. Please, we can't go on and on and on and on indefinitely here.
Advocate.
Let me wrap up, Chair, to say that the questions that we're relating on conviction, we will be requesting the NPA to respond in writing in terms of them. And then, and also the question that relates to the breaking of the SOS, as we have said that it is a matter that the department is looking into. As I said, that there's a monitoring committee that is sitting every week to ensure that then the systems are up and running. So I think that then we have actually covered all the questions that we asked. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Advocate. The issue of 2022-2023.
Thanks.
General
Honorable
Masimola, you want to respond to
it? Yes, thanks, Honorable Chairperson. General Fani will respond on that. Thanks, General Fani.
Good evening, Honorable Chair, all protocol observed. Chair, there has been deliberations that were entered into with Public Works with regards to the building of the VFRs, starting way back in 2019-20, with Public Works resolving that they will build these VFRs on behalf of South African Police Services, because they fall under the structures that are non-devolved. But a decision has since been taken in June 2022 that SAPS would be given permission to build their VFRs. If you look at the dependencies that are required for us to accelerate the procurement process with regards to acquisition of these VFRs, such as land acquisition, such as approval of municipal plans, and also looking at alternative building materials that we have other than just brick and mortar, our forecast indicates that we may just be able to build 20, but we may build slightly more. We are looking now at finalizing the procurement process with regards to acquisition of park homes so that we can accelerate and probably look at having much more than 20. But if you look at the normal traditional processes, we are anticipating that we'll settle at 20. We will, however, pick up in the subsequent year and probably even do much more than we are anticipating to do if we look at alternative building proposals. We are engaging other stakeholders that will assist us with how to unlock some of these building challenges that we've got to overcome with regards to public works. But we do have permission at the moment to do that. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you. Yeah, that is it. Honorable members, is there anything that you want to make follow-up of?
Chairperson?
Okay. Honorable Sharif?
I just want to say thank you to the officials for giving very comprehensive answers. It's really appreciated, you know, so that we as public reps understand exactly what's going on so that when we go to our constituencies, we have the information needed. So thank you very much for the responses. It is appreciated.
Thanks. Yeah, Honorable Minister and your day and the DMs. I think we had Honorable Sharif for his last comment. She's really appreciating what you are doing. So continue to do the good work.
We'll try harder.
No, thank you so much. They will try harder. Honorable members, I think we can now release the minister and the DMs together with the departments.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, members.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Siyabonga. Siyabonga kakhulu, Chair.
The council.
Nami niyabonga, minister.
The council, Chair.
No, it can just manage general.
Yes, sir.
If you want to say it. Mandy?
Yes, Chair?
I've seen on our agenda, you didn't put the issue of the previous set of minutes to be adopted.
Yes, apologies for that, Chair.
Mm.
The minutes are here, though. I can...
The two sets of minutes that we're supposed to adopt in our last minute meeting.
Yes, the 19th of May and the 2nd of June.
Mm. I just want to check with the honorable members because now it's 2034. Honorable members, do we continue adopting the two sets of minutes or we'll deal with it in our next meeting?
Chair?
Honorable Suminya?
We don't have enough quorum to adopt the minutes.
Yes.
1, 2, 3. Oh, we now 4. We're no longer 5. Okay. Honorable Sharif and Honorable Tembekwai. Is that the feeling of the members? We're supposed to adopt this set of minutes last week and we failed because of the quorum. And here we are, 1, 2, 3, we are 4. We were 5. I don't know whether Honorable Tomiling.
I think we've lost Bridget Honorable.
Yeah, I saw her. She was I saw her. But
probably the load shedding problem.
Yeah. Maybe that is the case. So meaning we postpone. Then we'll deal with the minutes in our next meeting.
Yes, Chair, I think that's fine. It's unfortunate that we don't have quorum because we could have just finished it quickly. But I'm okay with postponing it, Chair. Thank you.
No, thank you so much. Honorable members, if that is the case, let's call it a night. And thank you very much for honoring this and attend the meeting. But let's call other members to be here. We cannot postpone time and again the issue of adopting the minutes. It's frustrating.
Thank you.
No.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
And good night.
Have a good evening. Bye.
Bye-bye.